Hey, this is the Dean here. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston. Woo!
Hey, students. Have you stumbled in your course and want a fresh start? Well, At the Best University has your back. AU offers more than 850 courses that align to your program, so you can retake your course online, turn that grade around, improve your GPA, explore new subjects, and study from anywhere. Visit atthebestu.ca to browse our online courses and transform your education today.
Those of us who have been working in this space for a long time, we had an idea that we would get some sort of a massive assault on riots. And I actually, in the immediate aftermath of the election, for those of you who do read my newsletter, the very next day I published a, here are the steps that you need to take right now. I think that this is an issue of exhaustion. That is part of why we have seen this blitz of executive orders. It's designed to scare. It's designed to make you feel exhausted. It's designed to make you feel powerless.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Australia reviews gender-affirming healthcare for kids. Donald Trump attacks trans medical and military rights. And journalist Aaron Reed dissects Trump's executive order blitz. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Joe Bainline.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 1st, 2025. Gender-affirming healthcare for Australia's trans and gender-diverse young people is under review. The National Health and Medical Research Council will conduct the study, which will include the efficacy of hormone treatments and puberty blockers. Queensland's January 29th announcement of its own review moved the federal government to take action 2 days later. The state plans to pause access to all gender-affirming health care for new patients under the age of 18. Australian Health Minister Mark Butler urged Queensland officials to yield to the federal review and allow treatment to continue for the state's current young trans patients pending those results. He wants treatment guidelines to be nationally consistent. Butler says the committee of experts conducting the review will look at treatment guidelines in other countries. It will include public consultation and, importantly, the lived experiences of young trans and gender diverse patients. An interim report on the specific use of puberty blockers for young people with gender dysphoria is expected by the middle of 2026. There are no time projections for reports regarding other forms of pediatric gender affirming care. The antagonistic grassroots Australian Christian lobby is urging the government to ensure that the review is truly independent, free from activist influence, and grounded in medical evidence, not ideology. Meanwhile, most LGBTQ advocacy groups are cautiously optimistic about the national review. Equality Australia vows its participation in the process and urges Queensland officials to abandon their temporary pause so pediatric gender-affirming care continues to be delivered to patients across the country. CEO Anna Brown said, "Politicians should not be in the business of making medical decisions for young people and families they have never met and whose experience of life are unimaginable to most of them." Transcend Australia CEO Jeremy Wiggins expressed the fears of parents in his organization about the review, but hopes if this federal process remains ethical, draws on evidence, and the right people, including those with lived experience, we are confident the outcome will be positive for trans children and young people.
U.S. President Donald Trump has blood on his hands, in the words of Advocates for Trans Equality Executive Director Rodrigo Heng-Leitinen. Trump's latest and perhaps most egregious anti-transgender executive order restricts gender-affirming health care for people under the age of 19. Heng Leitinen warns this executive order not only prohibits, but sets the stage for criminalizing medically necessary gender-affirming care, endangering tens of thousands of transgender adolescents. The fallacy-ridden screed reads in part, "It is the policy of the United States that it will not fund, sponsor, promote, assist, or support the so-called transition of a child from one sex to another, and it will rigorously enforce all laws that prohibit or limit these destructive and life-altering procedures." The ban includes hormone therapies and puberty blockers, both of which are reversible. It prohibits pediatric gender-affirming surgery, which is rarely a recommended treatment option. The order halts funding through federally run insurance programs such as Medicaid and the military families TRICARE. LGBTQ policy analysts from the Williams Institute at UCLA issued a brief saying that Trump's order requires further administrative rulemaking, therefore it will not take effect immediately. Like many of Trump's shock and awe flurry of edicts, the legality of his ban on gender-affirming care for young people will almost certainly be challenged in court.
One Trump executive order is already on its way to court. The Human Rights Campaign and Lambda Legal are taking on the new ban on service in the U.S. military by transgender and gender-diverse enlistees. The same two national queer rights groups successfully blocked the first Trump administration's attempted military service ban in the 2017 Karnofsky v. Trump case. Trump reversed a Biden administration order that had opened service to qualified trans people, then specifically excluded them with another. It affects new recruits, but it could also impact currently serving trans and gender diverse personnel. In the words of Lambda legal counsel Sasha Burkett, "Thousands of current service members are transgender, and many have been serving openly, courageously, and successfully in the U.S. military for more than 8 years." HRC Vice President of Legal Sarah Warbelow says the order insults their service and puts our national security at risk.
The United States Supreme Court has agreed to hear tales of a family attending an LGBTQ pride event, a girl meeting her uncle's husband-to-be, and a prince's love for a night as they battle a dragon together. A group of parents in Montgomery County, Maryland, want the right to pull their children from elementary school classes that include such storybooks. They claim that their religious beliefs are being violated if they cannot shield their kids from LGBTQ content. They've already lost in an appeals court. Lawyers for the Washington, D.C. suburb school system had asked the high court to reject the case. They argued that the storybooks being challenged touch on themes of adventure, confronting new emotions, and making oneself heard, just like the classics Snow White, Cinderella, and Peter Pan. The district wrote, "Parents who chose to send their children to public schools are not deprived of their right to freely exercise their religion, simply because their children are exposed to curricular material the parents find offensive." The parents are being represented by Eric Baxter, senior counsel at the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. He insists that the school district is cramming down controversial gender ideology on three-year-olds. It's unclear if the Supreme Court will hear arguments in the case before its new term begins in October, according to the Associated Press.
Minneapolis, Minnesota's Twin Cities Pride is parting ways with one of its biggest business sponsors, but it certainly won't be sorry. The organization broke up with Target Stores in response to the Minneapolis-based giant retailer's announcement that it would end or scale back programs that promote diversity in the workforce and corporate culture. While it has scored high marks for inclusivity in the past, it's now ending its participation in the Human Rights Campaign's annual Corporate Equality Index. Far-right social media zealot Robbie Starbuck was targeting Target for potential consumer boycotts against corporate DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. More than a dozen major companies have bowed to those threats. Executive Director Andy Otto told the Minnesota Star Tribune that Twin Cities Pride would reject Target's expected $50,000 to $70,000 sponsorship this year to protest the company's surrender. As he told the Star Tribune, unfortunately, in a time when it's been a really, really rough week for our community, given everything that has come down from the new Trump administration, this was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. That proud gesture did not go unrewarded. Donations from the community made up for the Target sponsorship in less than 24 hours and doubled it within a few days.
Finally, the day before rival Target stores joined the trend of corporations abandoning DEI programs, voters representing 98% of Costco shareholders rejected a bid to dump its inclusivity initiatives. The defeated proposal was sponsored by the Robbie Starbuck Allied National Center for Public Policy Research. Costco's board of directors had vigorously defended the company's DEI policies, proud to proclaim that inclusion is central to their successful business model. The consulting firm Global Data predicted the vote ahead of the stockholders' meeting. Its retail division managing director Neil Saunders said, "I think people generally have confidence in Costco's management, and there's an attitude of, why rock the boat? It's sailing very nicely." Costco CEO Ron Vacris praised the overwhelming support of our shareholders. Starbuck lamented the vote in a social media post, saying that, "For now, I suggest conservative consumers find other places to spend their money." He probably shops at Target.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending February 1st, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay healthy.
And I'm Joe Bainline. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Look what they done to my song, Ma.
There's a target on the back of every transgender person in the U.S., and the public policy weapons are in the hands of the MAGA Republicans. The war is personal for transgender journalist Erin Reed. She's a respected independent voice with a large following on social media, earning more than 250 million views in recent years. Reed met last week with a group of trans people and allies to review the growing list of anti-trans executive orders coming out of the Trump White House. This Way Out's David Hunt covered the correspondence conversation.
First came a presidential order defining gender in the simplest terms.
I made it the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female. Gee, that was a tough one.
That executive order, signed on Inauguration Day by President Donald Trump, was quickly followed by two more assailing the rights of transgender Americans. One lays the groundwork for banning transgender people from serving in the United States military. The other attempts to outlaw gender-affirming health care for young people nationwide. These, among hundreds of executive orders of debatable constitutionality, came in rapid-fire succession, leaving reporters scrambling to cover the story, to predict the impact of the measures, and, as always with Trump, to separate fact from fiction. I'm David Hunt. In the news business, when a reporter dominates coverage of an issue or event, tapping the best sources and providing the most insightful analysis, we say they own the story. If anyone owns the story of the rights assault on transgender Americans, it's Aaron Reed.
I don't think many of us asked to be on the vanguard of this, but here we are. We're here. And we are building a world where future generations, I hope to God, don't have to fight this same fight. And as much as all the sound and fury from the top of the Oval Office is sort of raining down upon us, there are more people like me than ever before that are public, that are themselves.
Reed isn't just one of a small group of queer journalists covering national politics. She's one of an even smaller subset of transgender journalists. As such, she's covering the political assault on her own rights, even her own existence, and providing that coverage in great detail and with great accuracy, employing a veteran reporter's unflinching scrutiny. In a line-by-line analysis of Trump's order banning trans people in the military, she wrote, "This marks a chilling and undeniable shift. The attacks on transgender people are no longer cloaked in the faux respectability of evidence, science, or protecting kids. They never truly were, but now even the pretense has been abandoned." Her daily reporting can be read on Substack, a subscription-based platform for independent journalists. Find her at erininthemorning.com, with Erin spelled E-R-I-N. On January 30th, Reed met with about 100 trans people and their allies on a Zoom call sponsored by the trans-led nonprofit GRACE, Gender Research Advisory Council and Education. What started as a review of anti-trans legislation soon turned into a strategy session and pep talk with GRACE board member Kathy Brennan.
Okay, Erin, can you unmute yourself?
Yes, hello. Hi, everybody. How's it going?
Yeah, here you are.
Wished it were better circumstances, but I'm here tonight to speak with all of you. And look forward to talking. You know, I've been doing this work for a long time, and I think that there are very few people who have the history that I do in terms of like reading the stuff at the beginning. I was there whenever all of this current wave started. You know, whenever you talk about 5 years ago, if you would time travel somebody from 5 years ago to today, it would be unrecognizable. The debate over transgender people and our care and our existence and more. If all of you will probably remember 5 years ago, the biggest thing back then around trans people were a smattering of states that had sports bans, and that was it. There was one bathroom ban in 2016 in North Carolina, and that was a disaster. The PayPal pulled out of the state. Deutsche Bank pulled out of the state. They lost $3.7 billion in revenue because of that bathroom ban. But what happened after that was the same organizations that have become very popular, famous now, infamous now, you know, your Alliance Defending Freedom, your Project 2025, groups like the Heritage Foundation and more, they held a conference in 2017 in Phoenix, Arizona, and they planned out their strategy for what we're seeing now. And they executed that strategy over time. One of the architects of the plan from the American Principles Project, Terry Schilling, had specifically said that they were going to start with sports so that way they could get people comfortable with discriminating. And then after they got you with sports, they were going to go to kids, and then they were going to go to bathrooms, and then they were going to continue growing on that more and more and more. And like he sort of James Bond monologued this to CNN in early 2020. And we're seeing exactly that. Like the strategy has happened exactly as he had planned it. And the same groups that, you know, were part of that conference are now the ones that are writing the Trump executive order.
So where do we start now, right? Like it's, you know, it's kind of a really tough situation, but now we have all these executive orders. So the first one being about the military, and then about government ID. So access, you know, government ID, your ID is your access to everything in this country and the world, you know, like your driver's license, your social security card, your all of it. Like, so it's, you know, access. And if you don't have access, you don't have anything else.
Those of us who have been working in this space for a long time, we had an idea that we would get some sort of a blitz some sort of a massive assault on rights. And I actually, in the immediate aftermath of the election, for those of you who do read my newsletter, the very next day I published a, here are the steps that you need to take right now. And at the very top of that list was go get your passport renewed right now. Get it renewed right now. And thankfully, I was able to reach a large number of the community. I had built up quite a large readership, a large following, large viewership on various social media video platforms like TikTok and Instagram, where I blasted this message out there because I knew that one of the first dominoes to fall would be passports. And in fact, the very first day of the Trump presidency, we got an executive order that erased legal recognition of transgender people throughout the government. So in every single aspect of the way that the executive branch handles trans people. So we're talking non-discrimination protections. Are they going to, for instance, file a claim of non-discrimination if I get denied housing, you know, because I'm trans, because a particular landlord doesn't like that, doesn't want a trans person moving into the neighborhood? Am I going to be discriminated against in education because, you know, a public university decides that trans people go against their mission? And you know, typically, no, you're not supposed to be able to discriminate against people like that. But this administration has stated that it will refuse that legal recognition. And the top of that, the most impactful of that, was in passports, because many people that were in the process of getting their passports have had them held up right now.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt. Much of Aaron Reed's work as a journalist focuses on providing context to the onslaught of anti-trans measures flooding the zone with shit, in the words of Trump strategist Steve Bannon. She said the culture war attacks don't represent the lived experiences of many trans and LGBTQ people.
With all of the bad laws and all of the harmful things that they're doing at that level on our legal documents and more, on a personal level, I've never felt more support in my entire life. Like, I've got more support than I ever have. I myself in public every single day. I never get a second look. People talk to me about, you know, the things that I care about. I am a productive member of society. I am here. I have friends. And I think that part of the reason why they're making such a push through laws is because they know that the people that you live with in your community, that hate is not there. It's not, they want you to believe that it's so much more present. I think that this is an issue of exhaustion. And I think that that is part of why we have seen this blitz of executive orders. It's designed to scare. It's designed to make you feel exhausted. It's designed to make you feel powerless.
In a news analysis on her site, Reed explained how Trump's executive order defining gender could fundamentally reshape how laws, policies, and regulations are applied throughout federal agencies. The practical implications are enormous, she wrote. These definitions form the foundation of the rest of the executive orders, serving as a directive for every federal agency to reinterpret and enforce their policies through this narrow and reductive lens. For instance, the Department of Education could use this definition to exclude transgender women from Title IX protections, federal protections from sex discrimination enacted in 1972. In an analysis of the executive order banning gender-affirming care, Reed said the measure explicitly weaponizes the Department of Justice against transgender youth, their families, and their medical providers. The order defines gender-affirming care as mutilation and then exploits that definition to claim that female genital mutilation laws apply to transgender care. The executive order wields every available lever of power, and even some Trump may not legally control, Reed reported. If there's such a thing as a trans power couple, it's Reed and her wife, Zoe Zephyr, the first trans woman elected to the Montana legislature. The couple tied the knot last December in a ceremony at the Missoula County Fairgrounds in Montana. a moment that was, in Reed's words, perfect in every way.
I saw fireworks that day. I saw fireworks for the second time in 2 days.
In April 2023, Zephyr was barred from her seat on the floor of the Montana House of Representatives after she shamed the Republican majority for voting to outlaw gender-affirming care for young people. She spent the remainder of the legislative session working from a bench in the House lobby, a bench her supporters took turns occupying on her behalf after Republicans tried to deny her even that place to sit down. The GOP's petty tactics may have alienated some of their supporters, Reed explained.
You know, we drove to Glacier National Park, beautiful national park, and we pulled up to the side, and then this big F-250 pulled up behind us. And out came three burly men in camo. They walked up to us, and one of them looked to her and said, "Are you Zoe Zephyr?" And Zoe's like, yeah, that's me. Hi.
Wow.
And he said, well, I'm a Republican. It's like, we can guess, but that's okay. I'm a Republican. But then he said, "But I want to let you know I would sit on that seat for you." And he just... he had such a visceral response to the idea that, like, she is a democratically elected person who is being silenced just for speaking words, just for saying her mind.
Reed advised the trans people and their supporters on the Zoom call to focus on the things they can accomplish, the connections they can make, even in difficult times.
Don't let yourself burn out. Have something that has an endpoint. Find your local community. That's how we got through Stonewall. I mean, that's how we got through that period, is that we had our gay straight alliances and our queer family groups, our church groups, and more. And I think that, you know, whatever that looks like for you, help foster those connections, because that will help people stay here while we're dealing with all this.
I'd like to thank GRACE Executive Director Elena Kupek, Board Member Kathy Brennan, and journalist Aaron Reed for organizing this discussion of the assault on transgender rights by the Trump administration. Find links to their websites at thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
To the river we go, leave our worries on the shore and drift away on the river we know, sometimes the perfect words are never said.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Tanya Kane Perry and Joe Bainline, and produced by Brian DeShazer. David Hunt produced this week's Aaron Reed feature, with thanks to Kathy Brennan and GRACE, Gender Research Advisory Council and Education. The Beatles, Melanie Safka, and Michael Shines performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Lee Sloan of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening. Online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, on CFMH, St. John, New Brunswick, KYAQ, Newport, Lincoln County, Oregon, WORT, Madison, Wisconsin, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned.
Do you prefer tea or coffee? Indie, folk, rock, electronic? I've got it all. Tune in to What's Brewing Tuesdays from 7:30 to 8 a.m. for the freshest Canadian music to pair with your morning brew. Listen in as I chat over a cup of something fresh and talk about my favorite new releases from Canadian artists that I love. Nothing like good music and good coffee to start your day, so tune in to see what's brewing. And good morning. It is 7:30 a.m. here in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned into CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca for those of you listening in through the web. We are located in the lower level of Carruthers Hall on the beautiful Queen's campus. My name is May, and you are now listening to What's Brewing. So the first track that I have for you today is by Link 3 and the Apology Club. Those are both Montreal-based groups. This is Reach Her off of the album Halves, released on January 17th. It's a shoegaze genre. It's a newer group, too. I believe they started putting music out last year, so I'm excited to see what else they have coming down the pipeline. The album was amazing. I encourage you to check out the rest of the tracks if you enjoyed this song. The second track is by Joni Void and Sukyin Lee with Vertigo, released as a single on January 15th. Joni Void is Montreal-based, and Sukyin Lee is, from as far as I can tell, Toronto-based, and also a filmmaker and actor on top of being a musician and many other hats that they wear. Sukyin Lee will actually be at KCFF from filmmaker and soundtrack standpoint, so if you enjoy this track and you want to get a bit more insight, then you can definitely attend that event. And the track itself is from their upcoming album Every Life is a Light Constellation, releasing on March 14th, and there is a full video available with some stunning visuals if you are interested. Without further ado, we're going to start things off with Link 3 and the Apology Club with Reach Her right here on What's Brewing CFRC 101.9 FM.
Thank you. She paces anxiously.
And welcome back. You just finished listening to Vertigo by Joni Void and Suk Yin Lee. Before that, we had Link 3 and the Apology Club with Reach Her right here on What's Brewing CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up next, we have a very young Toronto-based artist, Talia Hinley, with her debut single 16 Candles, released January 16th. She's only 16 years old at the time of writing and recording, I believe. And she has more songs releasing this year, so definitely stay tuned if you enjoy her music. After that, we have Laurence Helly with Mes Sympathies. This was released as a single on January 22nd. This is a Montreal-based artist, and you might know her under her previous moniker, Mirabelle. She's retaking Laurence Helly as a reclamation of her name and her art. And she has an upcoming release, Tenderness and Kindness. So again, if you enjoy this track, stay tuned. But without further ado, Talia Hinley with 16 Candles right here on What's Brewing CFRC 101.9 FM.
She wished she was a teenage girl again. A minor joke that made me comprehend. In my mind, she's still a child, and this home is her dollhouse. Nostalgia has taken her mind, and I know it's taken mine. Why does she even try? keep on growing? Will I waste all of my time? My future's so ahead of me, but I feel so behind. Is this all ever offer? Will I always stay the same? Like my mama and her mama and a generation's pain.
Viens te poser plus près de moi, mon bel oiseau.
just finished listening to Laurence Halley with Miss Sympathy. Before that, we had Talia Himley with 16 Candles right here on What's Brewing CFRC 101.9 FM. Prior to that, we had tracks by Joni Void, Sook Gin Lee, as well as Link 3 and The Apology Club. But without further ado, we're going to get into the last few tracks of today. What a sad, sad time. But very exciting also because I love the music that I've chosen for you. So the first track is a little bit older than some of the music that I've been playing. It was released November 7th, but it's such an amazing song that I had to include it. It's by Tabby Yosha, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, with Truth Lays. It was released as a single. She's a Quebec-based artist of Haitian origin, and it's electronic, neo-soul-infused R&B. She's actually playing Quai de Brume on February 8th in Montreal, opening for Rozy. So if you enjoy her music and you happen to be in Montreal on February 8th, I strongly recommend. And then the next track I have for you is by, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this correctly, Thais. It's T-H-A-I-S with Taxi, released as a single on January 31st. This is a Montreal-based dark electronica pop artist. This is also leading up to her sophomore album, Person, which comes out April 4th. And then the final track that I have for you today is by Ribbon Skirt with Wrong Planet, released as a single January 28th. Another Montreal-based artist that's alternative, art rock, post-rock, and it's actually leading up to their first full-length album, Bite Down, on April 11th. So again, if you enjoy these tracks, check them out. Look forward to upcoming music. And without further ado, we're going to kick things off with Tabby Yosha and Truth Lays.
Ça balance ici. J'entends pas la fin du mot. Si je pleure.